This is Jim Inkster, and thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. And hope you had a great Thanksgiving, and it is Black Friday, the busiest shopping day of the year. You may have been listening to National Public Radio, NPR, this morning, and the word is that only 36% of the people in the country will be shopping today, down from 51% from a few years ago, and consumer confidence is down 4 months in succession. And we're here with two financial advisors in Baton Rouge, both of whom have been underwriters at times on this program. And we're pleased to have in studio Amin Walker, president of First Financial, known as the Biz Fixer, and Andy Anderson, who's a longtime financial advisor, has been with us many times. A few times, his firm was named the best in the country for its performance in given years, and it is all stocks all the time for Andy Anderson. He never met a stock that he didn't like when it's his stock, and he believes in what he's doing. And if you'd like to join the conversation, we would like to hear from you. 877-217-5757 is your number, and talk at talklouisiana.org is our email. And let's begin with you, Andy Anderson. Where are we right now as far as the market?
Well, it's been a good year. You know, Jim, last time I was on the show, you and I had a disagreement about the market and what drives the market and whether it was politics or whether it was economics. And, you know, I went to a friend of mine that up in Atlanta, another analyst, and we talked about this. And it's really interesting what he had to say, and I'd like to share it with you.
Okay.
You know, demographics are a really important thing because it's all about supply and demand. And in 1984, the baby boomers that were born starting in 1945 through, I think, 58, became 35 years of age in 1984. And so they hit what you call the consumption sweet spot, where, you know, people are building houses, they're buying cars, they're, you know, raising the kids, the whole deal. Now, that sweet spot started in 84, and the Dow was around 1,000. Now, realize the Dow broke above 1,000 in 1982. Well, then along comes 1995, and a little company comes along called Cisco Systems that invents the Internet. Productivity goes up. Profitability goes up, corporate profitability, and the market goes up dramatically between 95 and 2000. Then the baby boomers hit the age of 54, so the end of the consumption sweet spot. So you started in 84 with, you know, the baby boomers coming into the system, driving the economy. That consumption sweet spot ended in 2000. The correlation to the stock market is just too obvious to ignore. So where are we today? Now, in 1984, there were 74 million baby boomers. Today, we have 84 million millennials who hit the consumption sweet spot in 2016 as they hit 35 years of age. And there's, and look, human behavior goes back to Roman times now. I mean, the human behavior doesn't change. But the types of consumption will change. But what this means to me is that we are in a bull market similar to 1984 that could drive this market higher for the next 15 years. So I'm talking about not a major peak in this market until 2035. So, you know, if everybody out there is thinking about their portfolio, you're getting ready to get another bite at the apple.
All right. So Andy's a believer that the good times will continue, even though we've had a succession of growth in this country that is unprecedented month by month under several presidents now, two of them. And, of course, the growth over the last year has been good, last couple of years under President Trump, but the stock market has not performed as well under him as it did under his predecessor, Barack Hussein Obama. And the deficit was going down during the Obama years, and now it's going up, up, and away, and we're going to have the largest deficit in the history of the United States under this president. And these are under supposed good times. You can only imagine how badly it would be if we were not having economic strength right now. And we have a deficit that will go over $1 trillion, and this is a concern. It is.
We're always going to worry about something, Joe.
Well, the deficit's at historic levels, and the previous president, Bill Clinton, 229% stock market growth and a surplus. So When it comes to the economy, I mean, Walker, is President Trump in the same league as Presidents Obama and Clinton?
Well, thanks for having me on the show. And certainly, you know, I focus more on the business side. But, you know, of course, that affects the personal as well. And I would say, you know, one of the interesting things, if you look at it, is at the same point in both President Obama's, President Clinton's, even George W. Bush's presidencies compared to Trump, we're at about the same growth in that middle 30s right now. And what really distinguished them is what happened going through to the end of their term. And, you know, I don't know if President Trump's going to get a second bite at the apple to get a full 8 years to see really how does it compare by the time it's finished. But, you know, I think that those presidents, you know, we talk about the complexity of the economy and the different factors. And, you know, Andy brought up the, you know, the buying and selling and, you know, of the consumables. That's all great, well, and good. But, you know, the biggest thing to me that drives the economy or affects the economy is the stability. I mean, a bull market is based on the fact that people think things are good and things are going to get better and they want to invest. And so you have this instability in the White House right now, which, you know, you're the historian. I mean, I think that temperament of the president is something that's going to greatly affect whether or not this economy is going to continue to grow or not.
Well, people respond to all kinds of things, and under this president, we had a big tax cut. That's another thing that's different than Bill Clinton. Clinton raised taxes.
We had a corporate tax cut.
We had individual tax cuts.
Well, it was both corporate and individual.
And Bill Clinton raised
taxes
on the rich.
But a necessary corporate tax cut.
Bill Clinton raised taxes on the wealthy. And, of course, he left with a surplus, and he had a better stock market performance than any president in U.S. history.
He was in the right place at the right time.
Well, his successor was also around when all those baby boomers were coming of age. In the stock market, the Dow dropped 27% in the 8 years under George Bush. Why did it drop 27% under Bush, Andy?
If the same people were doing
Look,
things.
You're going to have difficulties along the way. I mean, look at the crash of 87. You know, I mean, you're going to have difficulties. You know,
but Reagan had the crash of 87, and still during his 8 years on the whole, the market went up 147%.
Yeah. Oh, the following 88 was up 29%.
But under Bush, under his 8 years, it went down 27%. He was left with a surplus and left us with a $1 trillion deficit that was coming down during the Obama years and is now shooting back up under the Trump years. And it's because of that tax cut, because there isn't as much money coming into the Treasury.
Look, I just shared with you probably one of the most important economic information I've seen in a long time. And your eyes are glazing over, and you're going, okay, it's because of the president. It's not because of the president. It's because with supply and demand, when there's a lot of demand for consumption, you're going to have a healthy economy. And then if you get inventions along the way, like the internet, and it could be the 5G coming up. Who knows? Chinese are already working on 6G. You know, who knows where this thing's going to go? Make this a way of life is my advice to people. Just look, I've been doing this for 45 years, and I'd say the only person that's got more experience with me that's still alive is Warren Buffett. and I'm just telling you, I've been doing this for a long time. I've never had a problem that I couldn't get over, and you just got to realize when you're 90 years old, 100 years old, which we're probably going to live to be that, you're going to want a nice, fat stock portfolio.
Well, stocks, I'll give you this, Andy Anderson, stocks are over time the best investment.
Oh, no doubt.
But you you don't generally do the Apples unless it's a new stock. You were when Apple was just taking off.
I bought Apple in 2003. It was a $35 billion company market cap-wise. It's now $1.3 trillion.
But when did you let go of it?
2007.
Was that too soon?
Yeah. But then I went and found other things. Yeah. You know, like, let's see, in 2013 or 2012, we started buying Tesla, and we bought Facebook. Mm-hmm. 2013, we were up 68% that year.
Okay. Well, I agree with you that stocks over time are the best gauge of
but
how...
But it's not get rich quick.
Well...
It's not get rich quick. It's get rich slowly.
Well, but at the same time, the increase over time, if you even factor in the downturns, is better under stocks. But some people don't have the stomach for that. And if you only got 8 years to live and you got a president who in his 8 years loses 27% in the Dow Jones Industrial Average, you don't have time to weather that kind of a bottom. I mean, Walker, for those who were 60 or 70 or 80 and are thinking about investing, should they think twice about going for some 100% stock portfolio?
Well, again, I don't have a stock portfolio-based advising company, but, you know, my recommendation would be no. I mean, I think that, you know, the bull market is typical of a buy and hold strategy, and if you're older, you just don't have time to buy and hold.
No, don't misunderstand me, Jim. I'm a multi-asset manager, meaning I do stocks and cash. Stocks and treasury bills.
But occasionally you say,
I don't do bonds.
Let's pull out and see what happens.
Absolutely. Okay, I went to 100% cash last year in September.
877-217-5757 to the phones in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana on Black Friday, busiest shopping day of the year. And, of course, the market will move depending on how people are moving today and purchasing items. And, of course, more people now are doing things online, and the economy has evolved. And Andy Anderson and Amin Walker are here. Andy handles mainly individual investors, and he's 100% stocks. He just told us that he is 100% in the market right now and believes confidently that good times are continuing with the stock market. Now, Amin Walker handles businesses, and Amin, more and more businesses are also relying on investments, but how many of them have a stock component as part of their portfolio?
Well, and I can't speak for every business because I don't know that actual number. I would tell you, though, of my clients, less than 5%.
Less than 5%. Andy, you probably think they should...
Well, look,
get in
what I try to tell people is make this a way of life. This is something that you do your entire life. It's not like you just, I'm going to put money in the market, then get out. You need to build a portfolio over time. I've been building my portfolio, 50 years I've been building this thing, and I keep building. I'm still building it. I add money to my portfolio. I don't pull money out.
And you have been around long enough that you're able to absorb the good times and the bad times. And every year is not a great year.
Look, paradoxical as it may seem, speculation is a better idea than trying to, you know, be safe. Mm-hmm. I'm just telling you, all this dividend paying stuff, all these mutual funds out there, they're really messing things up for people, and they just don't realize it. They don't understand.
Well, they don't understand, but they also don't want to take a risk. And, you know, you have the fear and greed factor when you're talking about investing. And,
very,
you know, right now we are definitely in a greed factor. You know, it's that idea of we're going to make a bunch of money. We're going to make a lot of money.
You're not seeing any greed right now.
I don't agree with that. I looked at your website this morning, and you put it in a greed standing.
It's definitely, you know, but you go look at how much cash is on the sidelines, and you're going to find out that it ain't that. You know, that's a short-term indicator that I'm using on my. That's a week-by-week.
Well, I understand it's a week-by-week deal.
But I'm telling you, there's the pessimism out there right now is pretty big.
Wow.
I talk to people every day, and people just are not interested in the stock market. Let me tell you what happens. What happens is this. You get all these people buying these annuities and these mutual funds and being real conservative and careful, and then the old greed factor really kicks in, which was between 95 and 2000. Now, in 76, when I started in the business, which we had just come out of the 73-74 recession, I couldn't give a stock away. I mean, I just couldn't give a stock away, you know. But in 2000, my phone rang off the wall, and people were cashing in their annuities, cashing in their mutual funds, and they would come to me and they said, "We want to invest in that Crisco systems." And I was like, "What are
Crisco?
You talking?" Yeah, they would call it. One guy called it Crisco. They didn't even know what it was.
By the way, the deficit for 2019, $1,091 billion. Lot of money.
About the size of Apple.
$1 trillion. You're correct, but it is over 4% of the GNP, and under the much maligned President William Jefferson Clinton, if we were to go back to when he left the office with a surplus, it was a surplus. So the percent of the GNP was on the other side. He was actually bringing money into the
treasury. Maybe he picked up on that Reagan economics. Reaganomics. Well, maybe he picked
Reagan.
Up on
Reagan had a big deficit.
But you see, this could never end. This could never end.
Huge deficit for Ronald Reagan, and he inherited a very small deficit from James Earl Carter. Here's Mike Johnson, congressman from Louisiana, probable candidate for governor in 2023, who on this show a few days ago actually said that he would rather have a big deficit and lower taxes than a balanced budget and higher taxes. Here is the congressman. Isn't it better to raise taxes and have a balanced budget than to lower taxes and have a huge deficit?
Well, no. Look, I'm an economic conservative. I believe, as we have now proven on the federal level, under the Trump administration and the last Congress, we had historic tax reform. We cut tax rates and we cut regulations, and it spurred on the economy. We've had record economic growth. I mean, it's astounding. We had the 90th record high in the stock market close last week. We have the lowest unemployment numbers in the history of the United States in every demographic.
All right, that's Mike Johnson, 877-217-5757, Congressman Mike Johnson. Let's go to David in Atlanta, who's been waiting patiently. David, you're on with Andy Anderson and Amin Walker. Hi, David.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'll be 71 Christmas Day. I've been trading the market in stocks, bonds, options for 50 years, and I think this could be the best of times and the worst of times. Every day I'm finding wonderful new technology like 5G, artificial intelligence. That's going to be a huge growth industry, and it's already started. But on the other hand, I'm very concerned about the national debt. You know, there's always been a crisis. Latin American crisis, Asian crisis, mortgage crisis, European crisis, Greek crisis, and the next crisis could be United States could have a bond auction and nobody's going to show up to buy because we're adding debt on top of debt when times are good. What happens when times are bad and we need to stimulate and we don't have the ability to borrow?
Well, Dave, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Haven't you heard this your entire 50 years? Every year there's something that's going to blow up, and it just never stops. And so if you sit there and worry about everything all the time, you never invest.
Well, you know, you make an excellent point. But let's face it, would you like to have been invested at the top of the market when the market's crisis hit? I mean, the Dow Jones just plummeted.
Sure. That's why trend following is important.
David, I hope you're doing well with your portfolio. And thanks for calling, and hope you had a good Thanksgiving. 877-217-5757. Patrick in Innisfil Estates, you're on with Andy and Amin. Hi, Patrick. Good morning to you.
Hey, yeah, I do disagree. I think when government has a deficit and you lower taxes for everyone, it's actually a good thing because then it causes government to say, where do we really need to spend on and what is something that's really not the role of government to be providing? And when you lower it, because government doesn't produce wealth. What produces wealth is industry. People out there making products that we then sell to the world.
All right, but when you have a deficit, you ultimately have to pay interest on that, and it's a component of the budget, and I mean deficits do matter long term. It's well, like your if you gave any of us $1 trillion in hot checks, we could live a pretty lavish lifestyle. I mean, Mr. Walker.
Absolutely,
talk.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, this debate can go on forever, and you know, it all depends on which side you're looking at. But you know, I am a firm believer that deficits are a horrible thing. They're a horrible thing on your personal level. If your own household has a deficit, they're horrible on a small business level. They're horrible even on a large business level, and certainly on a national level. I mean, you cannot conceivably argue that going further in debt is going to help the economy.
Well, you know, if you go back in history and you just kind of ask the question, how long did the Roman Empire last? I don't know, 3,000 years or something? I don't know. Jim, do you know? Yeah, you know everything.
No, well, it didn't last.
But do you want to be there for the fall?
No, but they started out, their currency started out with real big gold coins. And by the end of the Roman Empire, they had these little lead coins, you know. They debased their currency. And that's what we're doing. We're basically debasing our currency. And so how much longer can we go with this, you know, because we're just printing more money is what we're doing.
877-217-5757 and talk@talklouisiana.org for Andy Anderson and Amin Walker. And they are here discussing contemporary matters. And right now, it's been a fairly good year for the market. And we keep hearing about record highs. And the market, as I've stated before, Andy, it should always be at a record high. It was at a record high under Clinton. It was at a record high under Obama. Now it's at a record high under Trump. It was not at a record high under Bush because he lost 27% of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. But if the market's not at a record high, the president is incompetent.
Well, you know, the market hit a record high in 1928, okay? And what was interesting, if you study
the— And then it ultimately went down.
Well, big. If you study the in 29, it lost 90%. 29, 32, well, it lost 90%. Now, if you go back and study the 20s, it's kind of interesting because you find out what were the people that lost the most money in 29. First, it was the people on margin. Okay, that was obvious. Second, it was people that bought bank stocks that paid dividends because all the banks shut down. And then third, it was the railroads. So if you were in the conservative stuff in 1928 thinking that you could buy and hold and just sit there and collect dividends, you were the one that got hit the hardest.
877-217-5757. By the way, George W. Bush, 26.5% loss in the stock market. Herbert Hoover, 82.1%. Dick Nixon, 28.3%. Those are the three lowest. What do they have in common? We'll be back. This is Jim Engster. Pleased to have you with us. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving. And if you'd like to get in, talk about finances or individual stocks, we've got the stock guy, Andy Anderson, in the house, and twice his firm, BF Anderson, has been named number one in the nation in
07.
Another, and it was twice, wasn't
well,
it?
Well, we were second in 13.
Okay, all right. And
Money Manager Review, which
and Andy
who reviewed us.
Invests in stocks that usually are not your Apples and Disneys unless it was early on, and we'll talk with him about that. I think he's got 9 stocks in his portfolio, but Amin handles businesses, and of course, many businesses are now LLCs, and so you do personal returns as well, because when you have an LLC, the business is the individual and vice versa. So how is this budget plan from the president, the tax bill that passed a few years ago, how has it affected the people of all stripes in our country?
Well, just a quick clarification. The LLCs, yes, do translate into individuals. Hopefully the accountants and tax people have their people paying taxes as an S-Corp even when they're an LLC. But that being said, you know, everyone touts the tax bills, saving so much money for everyone. It's a cut. And granted, it was a cut. There was a cut in the tax in the individual tax bracket rates, and that's a wonderful thing. But, you know, what everybody leaves out is, one, the largest cut happened for C corporations, which are typically your largest corporations. You went from a 36% down to a 21% tax, and that's significant. And, you know, the other area that nobody likes to talk about is, you know, people with overseas interests in corporations are now able to bring their money back to the U.S. at rates that are less than a third of what they would have been prior to the cut. And so those two are very big things. But, you know, on the individual and on the small business level, it's very simple. If you had more than one child, this tax plan hurt you. And nobody can refute that. You lost all of your personal exemptions. So even though they tout, you know, that the standard deduction went up, almost doubled, that was great. But you lost all the personal exemptions with that. And that just wasn't good for most families because most families have more than one child.
Scott Clemens writes, I find it interesting that when a Democrat is in the White House, the deficit is a big issue with conservatives. Obama was attacked constantly for the federal deficit, but when it's a Republican running up massive debt like Trump is doing, the deficit doesn't matter to conservatives. What do you make of this Andy Anderson, Scott Clemens remark?
All I can say is that interest rates are at record low levels, and yes, the deficit is a problem, but I just can't figure out how they're going to solve it, and I just move on.
Well, just hope that it's not going to bring us down.
I'm just not really a knowledgeable
okay.
on the subject.
Miriam Davey writes, the real currency of the U.S. is that we have and abide by the rule of law, and our populace respects it. By and large, that protects private property and provides an essential degree of consistency and predictability for business and investment the world over. If the people ever totally lose faith in their government and their country, the U.S. will lose its high value.
Boy, is that a great point.
Well, what about what's going on right now?
Well, Alan Greenspan said, when he was testifying before Congress, they asked him, said, what makes the United States of America so special? What makes us so economically secure? And he says, it's our Constitution that guarantees property rights.
Well, I agree. And, the property rights is a very important statement in there. But I think the more key statement in there is that people have to have everyone has to have confidence in their government. And you keep saying it's not the president. It is absolutely the president. He is the face.
No, I'm not. I'm saying it doesn't mean that it's all about supply and demand to me.
It's about supply and demand.
Trump is not going to determine how many diapers are sold.
He's not going to determine, but he's going to determine how they're sold just because people are going to follow him. Look at the fact that
it's a component.
It's not a component. It is a major component.
It is the key
when people don't feel safe, when other governments look at us like we are fools, it affects everything.
That's your opinion.
Okay, climate disruption, writes Silas Bogue, impacts will render meaningless terms such as business as usual. These impacts will be anything but business as usual and indeed are already reality for significant parts of the globe. If our planet is in peril, how can our economy roll merrily along, Andy Anderson?
Well, I did drive a Tesla for a while.
I know you did, but you got rid of it. And you sold your stock.
I'm probably.
And Tesla's been going through the roof.
You know, the stock is. It's been difficult. It's been a difficult investment. I made my money.
But it's been going up and away.
I made good money in Tesla. I bought the car. I was kind of lukewarm on the car, to be frank with you. I think technology will eventually solve a lot of these problems.
All right. Climate change, I mean, Walker.
Climate change is important. I'm a little more conservative, I think, when it comes to climate change. I think that it's important to make sure that we take care of our climate. But I don't feel like it's the big bad shadow that everyone talks about as much as
well. The Chinese doing coal-fired power plants.
Well, that's part of it, but
no, it's a big part.
But maybe we should get together with other countries.
What
and
is
have
their
some
population
kind of
three
accord.
Times our size?
Jim and Walker. Jim, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, I'm really confused. I'm not really sure why supply and demand and supply side and anything else matters when Rome is burning.
Okay. I think that's directed at where we are as a country right now. And we certainly have a president who campaigned on a pledge to balance the budget, and we're a $1 trillion deficit. And when you look at the forecasted deficits, they're going up and away in the next few years, even with a supposedly robust economy. How can we have a good economy when we have a $1 trillion deficit, Andy Anderson?
Well, look, you know, you mentioned I have 9 stocks in my portfolio right now, and I can tell you, last year, starting in September, I moved to treasury bills. I'm either in treasury bills or I'm in stocks. And I started moving to treasury bills in September, October. Market last year between September and December dropped 19.84% due to the fact primarily that the Federal Reserve was raising interest rates, okay, when they probably shouldn't have been. Then they reversed course, and then starting on December 27th, we started to turn around. Now, I can tell you, growth stock cycles are cycles. They come in cycles, and you've got to pay attention to them. And so starting about 2 years ago, I'm talking 16, around May of 16, we started a growth stock cycle. Now, it was led by mainly software stocks, cybersecurity stocks, those kind of investments. Now it's all flipping. We're going through what we call a rotation. And right now I would really emphasize that for the first time this year, healthcare stocks are starting to lead the way.
Healthcare
stocks.
Well, what happens if the courts strike down the Affordable Care Act?
All I'm telling you is don't fight the trend. Okay, the trend is up in these stocks. They've been downtrending since all 11 months. And the healthcare was the worst performing sector of the market other than energy since the beginning of this year. And then all of a sudden, boom, they're starting to pop out and they're starting to act like they want to rally.
All right.
So I would be paying a lot of attention to healthcare stocks right now.
All right, 877-217-5757. Still time to get in under the wire with Amin Walker and Andy Anderson. And talk at talklouisiana.org. Coleman asks each of you, what compels you to buy a stock? What are the reasons why you buy a particular stock, Amin?
For me, I don't limit what type of stock I buy, which a lot of people do. I will buy stock when I have excess cash. In general, what I believe in my age, I'm a little bit younger, 53, but I feel like I should spend more of my money in real estate. But when I actually buy stock, I look at certain elements, and I hate to say this, but my wife, she drives my opinion. And, you know, and we buy arms-related stock for suppliers of military. We buy alcohol and drug-related stocks, and we buy stock related to sex, believe it or not. Rick's Holdings, which is Rick's Strip Club.
Well,
so,
you
just
know,
depends.
We break it down into three primary decisions. What is the story? What are the numbers? And what is the chart, or what is the trend? Now, the story has to do with management. We want to invest in companies where the management has a vision, and they also have to have the ability to operate a business. So you could take an Elon Musk. He's got a vision. Can he operate the business? Well, that's the big question mark there. Then on the numbers, I would not look at a stock investment unless I feel that over a reasonable period of time, the company can double its earnings at some point. So what the rule of 72 is 72 divided by growth rate gives you how many years it takes for that growth rate to double the number. So when you look at a company and you see you might want to look at a Campbell Soup or something like that, projected growth rate, say 3%, 4%, 5%, that those earnings will take 10 to 15 years for those earnings to double. Whereas if you start looking at some of these 5G companies or some of these healthcare companies or some of these retail stocks, such as a Lululemon, you're going to see companies that are projected to grow 15, 20% a year using rule of 72. You're now looking at earnings doubling within 5 years. So we start out with the story. We got to have a vision. We got to have operation skills. We got to have a growth rate. And then chart is probably the most important thing, believe it or not. And not many people read charts, but I do, and I think they're important.
All right. A listener, Tracy, asked, why is Tesla's market value more than General Motors? I think it's because of the strategy.
I mean, General Motors doesn't have a vision.
Well, but Tesla's never made a profit.
Yeah, but that's, you know, neither did Amazon for a while.
Okay. Some stocks obviously have a track record, but when you look at a chart, you may look at the chart of how the stock's fluctuating, but when it's this constant red ink,
I'm not looking at fluctuating.
Why would you invest in Tesla right now?
I'm looking at a trend. I'm looking at a trend. Where,
so there's not as much red ink.
Well, in other words, if you look at a chart and you say, okay, well, this thing's in a downtrend, why do you want to do that? You know, whereas if you look at a chart and the stock's in an uptrend, jump on the trend. Trends last a lot longer than people realize. Now, Tesla is in an uptrend right now. I would take a serious look at Tesla. I bought Tesla even recently, and then I dumped it the day they announced the truck. I lost a few bucks, nothing major. I am looking at the truck. I just didn't.
You're not going to be driving a Tesla.
I told myself that the stock broke 345, I was out. I was in there at about 348. And it dropped below 345, and I got out around 338. So, you know, that kind of thing.
I agree with your second point, but, you know, the other ones are not. Look, the stock market, whether it's you with 50 years experience or someone with less experience, is a gamble.
It's a speculation. Big difference.
Speculation is a fancy name for gamble.
Okay, we'll return after this timeout with more from Andy.
That's a big misnomer.
All right, be quiet here. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Happy Black Friday. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving. We're wrapping it up with Amin Walker of First Financial. And if you'd like to get in, 877-217-5757. He's joined by Andy Anderson of BF Anderson & Associates. And we're talking about investment strategies and where we go. And, of course, the economy is going to be a big factor in the presidential election of 2020. What do you think about 2020? Is it looking good, Andy Anderson?
Well, I mean, we do, like I say, a lot of technical work. And there's something that's happened here recently that has really not happened but five times since around 1945. And it's where I'm taking, and again, I'm going to get into technical terms here, but I'm taking a moving average of a particular index, this case being the New York Stock Exchange. I would compare 2018 very closely to 1987. For some reason, the similarities are just too dramatic to ignore. So I would think that we're probably had like a crash of 87 last year, which was in 18. We've had a good coming out of that here. But if you really think about it, go back to September of 18. We really haven't gone.
All right.
That far.
So what does that mean for 2020?
We're getting started. I think we're going to be up 15-20% next year.
I agree. I think the bull market is going to continue, and things will be status quo until then. But until election time.
There are some stocks that will do better than 15 or 20, and there's some, and this is even if things are really bad, and there's some that will not do as well. So it's a matter of picking the right ones. And Andy Anderson and Amin Walker, hope you had a good holiday. We'll be calling on you again soon.
Okay, thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Good to see you both.